Hey, man, children. Just Lucas cutting in at the start of the show to let you know that we've got a little announcement for Christmas at the end of this episode. So stay tuned. Now listen to this episode with Pat Powell.
Beware of Chris's mess.
But all the monkeys are in the zoo. Every day you meet quite a few. So you see, it's all up to you. You can be better than you are. You could be swinging on a star.
Hello and welcome to the Man Child Cave. You're listening to Lucas, and across from me is my pal Crispy.
Hi viewers, listeners, whatever you are out there in whatever land. Welcome to the podcast where we talk crap and bollocks. Little touch of mental health.
A little bit about life.
A little bit
love.
About life. But the main focus on being an adult child that can enjoy things and just have a good time with life. And tonight we've got a good friend of mine, Pat Powell,
woo,
on as a guest. Hey, Pat.
Hello.
Woo.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
We've got an audience.
Yeah, yeah. Lucas got introduced to Pat a couple of weeks ago.
I did.
When we were sitting here doing a prep night for one of our podcasts, and I got a call from the local bit up the road, and they said, oh, can you come and help us out with the sound? And I was like, yeah. And we were lucky enough to like listen to a bit of Pat Powell on
that's right
on that particular night.
It's very exciting.
Well, part of the reason you got that call was because someone said, who can we get? And I went, have you got Crispy's number?
Oh, thanks, man.
That's what happened.
Yeah, cool. Well,
so,
thanks.
If you haven't heard of the name before, Pat Powell, singer around town, maestro of the microphone.
I've done quite a bit of mixing up at Lazy Bones, and I've got there's a king and queen of the vocals.
Yeah,
and Pat Powell's the king, and
and the queen.
No, Joe Favreau.
Yeah,
you know, people that where they hop up on stage. Most people who hop up on stage, there's a fair bit to do.
Mm.
You're like, got to work them out and, oh, there's just that little bit of their voices. You know, I'm going to do this. I love Pat because when he hops up on stage, he goes, check 1, 2. Yeah, it's all right. Fallback's fine. And then as soon as he starts, I'm like, oh, job done.
You're making it too easy for him.
Life's too short. You know, it's kind of be efficient.
Yeah.
Be efficient.
Be efficient. Just know how to do your thing, and Pat always
Half of it is knowing your sound.
Mm.
If you know what you need to hear, and you know normally the stuff's tuned relatively close, so it's a tweak here and a tweak there.
Yeah.
And I kind of know what to say to get what I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I take a minute to do a sound check, that's a long sound check.
Yeah. Which is professional, if you ask me, where you've got all these other people that'll do a sound check that lasts an hour and a half and it's a five-piece band and there's really not too much going on.
Yeah, what like, are you fiddling with at the end of the day? Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah. You really want just like 500 hertz pulled out of the fallback?
anyway.
Yeah.
And I think, are you our possibly our first ARIA Award winner?
Oh, yeah. Double ARIA Award winner.
We had Dale on the last podcast or a couple of podcasts ago. I don't know if they heard of maybe won something, but
in my memory, they've won something, but I can't remember what.
Yeah, maybe. But you're the most recent, and like literally last week. So
yeah,
that's pretty exciting.
So, yeah, last Thursday, which was good.
What did you get that one particularly for?
The Melbourne Ska Orchestra Best World Music Album.
Wow!
Awesome.
Yeah,
that is an amazing outfit. I haven't actually heard you perform with them, but went up to the Blues Festa, I think it was maybe 8 years ago, and they were playing, and they did Golden Wedding.
Yeah.
And it blew my socks off. Like, I'd been wandering around, like, Blues Fest, like, going, oh, yeah, I want something to dance to.
Yeah.
And then they did that, and I was like, oh.
I'm in.
It was so good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and, yeah.
No,
that's a match made in heaven, if you ask me. That's great.
Yeah, well, that was accidental. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I work as an artist driver at Blues Fest. I used to stage manage at one point. I stage managed for about 6 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And then the driving job came up, so I jumped at that.
Yeah.
Way easier. And you get to see everybody.
Nice.
So you see all the gigs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, you're working, so you can't see the entire show, but I can see kind of 20 minutes of most people.
Yeah.
Anyway, I drove the orchestra to the stage.
Yeah.
And one of the guys I knew from 30 years ago when he was playing in a band in Adelaide, and he said, "Oh, Nicky, do you know that guy sings?" And Nicky went, yeah. You know. Anyway, a short while later, I ended up in Melbourne with someone else from the band that's got his own band called the Scarvenders, Steve Montgomery, and he'd organised for me to sing with Nicky's band like 2 days later.
Mm.
So I turn up to the gig, and they'd organised for me to sing like "The Tide Is High," you know, and they're playing Calypso and Mento and shit. And I said, "Well, fuck that. You know, like, I'll do a Calypso song." So I talked him through, you know, like, in a minute, and I did this song called "My Pussy." Right.
You won?
Anyway, I've got the whole audience singing, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah, so you cool.
Know, "My Pussy," you know. I think about 2 or 3 weeks later, I got a phone call from Nicky saying, "Oh, we got this gig, you know, to do as a session. Do you want to come down to Melbourne and sing it?" And that was the best things in life for free-to-air TV ad.
Nice.
And Nicky had organised to do a 3-minute version, which he was going to release on the back of the ad kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be like the TV stars, you know, having fun with a big ska band. Anyway, they were useless. And the band was rocking.
Yeah, right.
So they kind of re-edited everything to feature the band more. And I came out of it really well because I was there just singing it.
Yeah.
And it just took off. It just took off. It was a smash. And they got a grant to do an album and tour it. And they said, "Do you want to be a part of it?" And I went, "What, come down and sing one song?" No. You know? And
what's the point?
Yeah. So they said, "Well, do you want to be part of the band?" I said, "I'll do that, you know." So I came in at the right time, recorded with them, and started touring with them. So
That was that.
And it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And last year, the album that we kind of got the aria for is, we did 52 tracks last year, so we released a track a week.
Fuck.
And,
Jesus.
How many pieces in that band?
24 when we tour now, but there used to be 30 when I've joined.
Wow, fucking 30. Hell.
That's huge.
Right, so when we play Melbourne, it's often 30.
Who's writing the actual, like, music for it?
Everybody. Like, there's maybe half a dozen people that kind of
get involved
and write bits and pieces, except for one song, which I did.
Yeah.
Right? And I kind of sang all the parts, sent it to them down the phone, and they said, "Oh, well, kind of flesh it out a bit, you know?" So I hooked up with a friend in a studio, and we digitally did everything, played all the instruments, all the rest of it, fake horns, the whole bit, sent it down there, and they recorded it.
Wow.
They did it.
And yeah, right.
And the song's called "Bus Driver," but it's like Calypso ska, which as I understand, doesn't exist anywhere. No one's ever done it, but we've done it. You know?
Calypso ska.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
What's the time signature of that?
Oh, yeah. You know.
That.
Yeah. Upbeat.
That. Upbeat. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Nice. So tell us a bit more about yourself, Pat. Like, you're...
I'm Jamaican. Come from a big family. I'm not even going to get into that because it's just...
we had a quick rundown before the pod.
It's too big. It's too big.
It's massive. But
anyway, I come from a big family and it blew me away.
But... my parents went to England in the 50s, and they had two kids already, my two elder sisters in Jamaica.
Mm.
And I was actually born in Bristol, and then I have a younger sister that was born in Huddersfield up north. So I didn't meet my two elder sisters till I was six,
right,
when they came to England. And we lived in an area in Bristol called St. Paul's that was... very kind of multiracial. There were like West Indians from everywhere, Trinidadians, Dominicans, you know, Haitians, but there were also like Hungarians, Italians, Polish.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like a real melting pot, but yeah, it was right next to the centre of the city. So because of, you know, like the social climate at the time, you know, there was a shitload of racism and stuff going on, you know, we kind of looked out for each other.
Yeah.
So the community thing was very, very big, and no one was playing kind of reggae or ska, because ska was early 60s, you know?
Mm.
And they weren't playing that in the clubs or on radio at all. So they'd have these parties, which we called them blues, right? But they were blues parties, we'd call them. So they'd clear out the basement of someone's house.
Yeah.
And they'd have these massive speakers. I'm talking about 6-foot speakers.
Yeah, right? Yeah, big old school.
You know, big old school drivers. 18-inch drivers. You know,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So massive things in someone's basement. And music would be rocking from about, it'd start like 11 midnight, rock through till maybe 10 the next day.
Yeah,
right. So I was one of these guys, kind of, the term got coined years later, it wasn't at the time. I became like a funky dread. So I'd go to the nightclubs and listen to kind of funk and R&B.
Mm.
And then when the clubs closed, which was like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and then hit the blues and then really party.
Yeah. Right?
Until daybreak.
And that's then, awesome.
Well, are you talking just like 12 bar, like funky blues, or are you talking reggae blues?
Not like...
Because like, yeah.
The Jamaicans covered everything that they heard, right? So they heard country, blues, and jump blues.
Yeah.
So the people that were kind of the big influences were like Roscoe Gordon, Fats Domino, and Louis Jordan. Those three, more than anybody else.
Yeah, right.
Right. But they heard BB and Ray Charles and Nat King Cole and all of them as well.
Yeah.
They also heard Sam Cooke and,
yeah,
you know, and then all the early Motown stuff. They heard all of that and they covered everything.
That's a wide brush.
Right? Yeah.
They like covered
Sam
everything.
Sam Cooke to like, yeah, yeah, wow.
But they did it in their way. And then the ska came out of, there was the Alpha Boys School in Kingston, and they played jazz. So it was jazz musicians doing a version of jump blues.
Right.
And they added the skank to it, you know, the scat, 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 scat,
yeah,
scat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and then that kind of went from maybe 3 or 4 years, and then we went, well, hold on. This is too fast. Let's slow the shit down. So, and then, yeah. So we went to rock steady.
Yeah, right.
And then, I love rock steady, man. That's just the best, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it went from rock steady to reggae, you know.
Right.
So that whole thing, that's my whole upbringing. So I was listening to Jamaican renditions of R&B, country, and soul when I was really young.
Mm.
And I was also listening to, like, big band jazz, you know. So I was listening to Nat King Cole, Mel Torme, Perry Como, Frank Sinatra at the same time as I'm listening to the Scatterlights.
See, when I think about my warehouse days, which is kind of similar, but it was all DJ based.
Mm.
But you're talking about live musicians on stage.
Live musicians on stage and DJs.
Yeah, okay.
So the DJs were the ones that kind of pushed it in the UK and opened the door for the bands to play. But the bands were in Jamaica.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So, and they were just churning out music, right? Churning it out.
Yeah.
And I know a couple of the guys that were part of the session players, because some of those guys were Australian.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So there's...
and you still know them today? So
couple of them are dead now. The guy that built the first recording studio was Graham Goodall, Australian.
Yeah, right.
Then Peter Stoddart, keyboard player from Adelaide, Lowell Morris, drummer from Melbourne, and Dennis Sindri, guitarist from Melbourne. They had a jazz surf band and they got a booking to go and play the hotel circuit in Jamaica.
Wow.
So that was about...
That's so cool.
A jazz surf band. That was either,
so that was either 56 or 57, yeah. Around there.
Yeah.
Right. And Goodall got into a bit of an altercation with Chris Blackwell, who had Island Records, as yeah. You all know him. But Island Records was actually put together by Chris, Graham Goodall, and Leslie Kong.
Right.
Who was a Jamaican producer. Right. So they were the three to put that, and then they split later, and Chris ended up with it on his own.
Okay.
I think the story goes that Graham was having a thing with Chris's girlfriend, and they turn up at a party, and everyone's expecting this big fight. And Chris says, you know, you're the only one with your knowledge within, you know, thousands of miles of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do this. So...
They put away their beef.
They put away their beef.
Wow. And, for the music.
And, that's awesome.
Yeah, for the music, yeah. And came up with something that is a legacy to this day. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's like tunes before hoes. Sorry, bring you in there.
Be careful where you say that. Anyway, but that kind of kicked on, and then... They broke up, but, you know, Dennis stayed in Jamaica. Peter married a Jamaican. He stayed. Graham stayed there as well. Graham passed away, like, maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Peter passed away about 2 years ago. Lowell's pretty sick. He's in Melbourne. But I've done a gig with him at his retirement. Like, he can't play drums anymore, but we got him a set of congas and just... He jammed just with him. Jammed it. It was great.
That's how amazing. Was he? Like, because he's in the retirement village?
Yeah.
Like, was he still able, like, you know?
He was able to play congas.
Yeah, cool.
But, you know, he couldn't do the kick drum anymore, you know.
No, because that's just legs his and knees stuff. But, gone, like, he still had the rhythm.
Still had the rhythm, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't play anything too difficult, you know.
Yeah.
But it was still cool.
Yeah.
But we did a gig for Melbourne Festival where they all came back to Melbourne to do a gig, and I was the singer for them, you know.
Oh, awesome.
That's awesome.
And that was an honour, you know.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, Bristol was this melting pot of kind of like West Indian music and culture in this one area. And I kind of wanted to be a drummer. I never wanted to sing, you know.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So that's how I started drumming when I was about 9.
Yeah.
Right? And I did that for about 10 years. And but never really got anywhere, never really went anywhere.
Mm.
And I wanted to, and I started singing because I was in all my school choirs and stuff. But I was like a boy soprano.
Right.
Right? And then my voice broke. I was just like, shit.
Boom.
Yeah, you know, it just dropped.
Dropped
you know?
Right down.
And it was like, what am I going to do? You know? And then there was the whole thing about, you know, going to clubs, you know, to listen to music and dance and have a good time, meet women and stuff like that. And I was a pretty good dancer, but I was like in the top 5, but that meant there was like 4 guys in front of me.
Right, right.
So I wasn't getting no play, you know.
Oh, really?
This just
there was a pecking order back then.
This yeah, wasn't happening. Dancing. It was like,
yeah, right.
You know, because some guys had the moves, you know. And we used to dress, right?
Yeah,
the poor,
right.
The poor English guys never stood a chance because they would prop up the bar.
Right.
And leave their women as they got pissed. And then the women would like either sit around the table or dance around their handbags in a circle.
Yeah.
And we used to dress nice. We'd come up, can I have the pleasure of this dance? Yeah, so you paid attention to them, right?
Right.
We weren't good boyfriends, but but we were charming and polite, and so we kind of did really well.
Yeah.
I had these 4 guys always getting the cream, you know? It's like,
yeah.
So, and I discovered that I could remember a new song faster than any of them.
Right. Yeah, right.
So I'd learn a song in a day. So I'd get, and it, the big thing was dropping the next new thing, you know?
Right, yeah.
So the DJs would go out of a way to find the next new track out of Jamaica and just drop it, you know? And like, I'd have it down the next day. So I would be dancing and singing.
Right.
So that's what got me in was...
So you're on the dance floor.
I'm on a dance floor and I'm singing.
You're number 5.
I'm number 5.
But then all of a sudden... Right,
and all of a sudden...
With the rocket...
With the... you know? I started climbing the ranks. So, but I had to, you know, they thought it was cheating.
Oh.
You know, I went, well, you know, I'm dancing too.
Yeah, you know? I mean.
But I had to use other shit to equalise that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how it went.
Working your vibes, working out different moves. Like, maybe I won't be able to do that, you know, double swishy move. That dude does over there, but...
but I can sing the shit out of this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I spent, like, hours practicing dropping my voice for the phone, you know? It was like...
Right.
You know, so...
For the phone?
Yeah, yeah. So it'd be like, you know... You know, it'd be like, oh, someone ring up, you know, or you ring some... girl and be like, you know, hi, you know, how are you? It's Pat, you know, and he was like, hi, it's Pat, you know, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, like, any chance you could meet up, you know, it's just like, yeah, just drop it, you know.
So, you'd actually sit at home and go, okay, Jenny's calling.
Yeah.
Hi, Jenny.
Yeah. I would drop the voice. Yeah.
Come on, give us your best. So I'll be Jenny. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Jenny.
How you doing today?
I'm pretty good.
I don't know why I'm American.
I don't know why either, but, you know, because you're cute, I'll overlook that.
Hey. Oh, you're making me wet.
And I have the cure for that.
Oh, that practice paid off. I think I am a little wet.
You got a little red, you're blushing.
So, you know, you kind of, you put that effort in, and then a bunch of guys asked me to join a vocal group.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to sing and play drums.
Mm.
And at the time, I didn't put the effort in. I should have stuck with it because I gave it up to sing.
Right.
Which I don't regret, but I'm a singer that's a frustrated drummer.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you play now?
I played drums twice in the last 8 months, and that was the first time in 30 years.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Right? And it was the scariest thing I've done in I don't know how long.
But you can keep a beat. Like,
I can hold a groove down. Yeah, yeah. But I'm like, I'm sitting there scared shitless that I'm going to lose it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm doing a gig with Declan Kelly, and Declan says, I'll pack out my kit. I'm going to play guitar and sing. Fuck off. It's just like, I haven't played in 30 years. Yeah, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm there, like, you know.
Okay.
And I'm playing like a rock steady groove, and like, apparently I was grinning from ear to ear, but I was freaking out the whole time.
Right.
The face is saying something.
Yeah, yeah.
But inside, I'm a ball
of
mess.
Because, like, you hear the fill, you know where it's supposed to go. Nah, I'm not going to make it because your chops, if you're not doing it all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do something sloppy. It's like, because for me, groove is everything.
Yeah,
so if I've got a groove, I'm just sitting.
Going to sit right
I'm
in
not
it, yeah.
going anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, so that no fills, no nothing.
I so respect drummers, like, you know.
Yeah, me too.
I play guitar and, like, keep one hand, and I'm not very good at it. I've been trying for the last 10 years to get that no rain.
Oh yeah.
And I still can't do it, but like for drummers to keep a rhythm with four different parts of their body, like, you know, the kick, the snare, the hats, and then what's happening with your hands, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
like,
it is. It's
when
insane.
You see a good drummer, it's like, oh
yeah, I
it's
love
the
that.
Heart.
Yeah.
It's the heart and soul. Like doing sound stuff, that's sort of 70% of my mix, what happens with those things.
Mm.
And then everything else pops above that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
good. But that's awesome, man. Do you remember the first gig that you actually sung?
Yeah, it was a 5-man vocal group, right, in Bristol. And there were a couple of brothers, the Campbell brothers, that kind of pushed me into singing, you know. And so it was them, another guy, Dennis Richards, myself, and who else? Paul something. But anyway, I was the tenor.
Yeah.
Right? And Barry Campbell had like the best bass baritone voice you've ever heard. You know,
mind blowing. Oh, they're so cool.
So, so we're doing like four tops and stuff. And I did the first thing we recorded was a song called Just Ask the Lonely, which was a Four Tops track. Mm. So we're doing like Temptations, Four Tops stuff.
Yeah.
And some Gladys Knight stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and we put a show together and we went out and did it, you know. And I dug it. Because we'd been going to clubs for ages and dancing and stuff, you're kind of showboating anyway.
Mm.
So being on a stage was just another way of, you know, being in the light, And singing for joy, but also being in the limelight. So, you know, we were hoping that women would like us for that as well. Which they did.
I mean, it's a proven thing. If you put a guitar on that dude, they...
It elevates,
instantly get 30% more attractive.
Yeah.
And like, you know, look at Mick Jagger. I mean, he is one ugly motherfucker.
Yeah.
But chicks go fucking goo.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, if you got the voice.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the dude, but there was this really big, fat African dude that one of my old girlfriends told me about. And he, like, they had to actually, like, get him out onto stage with a wheelchair because he couldn't walk anymore. But he had this deep down voice.
And people melt.
Like it rained.
Yeah.
But not from the sky.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's why I don't play guitar, because otherwise I'd be 130% attractive.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to cancel out us or all us ugly fellas.
I'm
sorry.
Sorry.
It's fine. That's fine.
Anyway, so
don't learn how to sing.
That kind of pushed me into wanting to sing more, you know. But I always thought that I'd kind of like work and then do it on the side or on the weekend or whatever. Yeah. And then because of the kind of social climate in England, I was kind of like an angry young man.
Mm.
Saw too much shit and just got harassed and all the rest of it. And so one day
What period are we talking about? Like when you left England?
77.
77?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck, you're old.
I am.
77?
77.
I was, not even 5 years old. So I was born in 74. Yeah. Let's do some little math, Crispy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I was -3.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So I left and I went to West Germany. Yeah, I lived there for 4 years.
How was that?
Fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Put a band together with my cousin, you know, because he was already over there and playing reggae over there.
Yeah. Sweet.
You know, we had a great time.
How old were you at this stage?
21.
Oh, fuck, man.
That's cool.
So just to go back, and not, like, who cares about numbers or anything like
that?
But, like, more interesting to me is, like, through the period of your life.
Mm.
Like, so when did you start the actual five-piece?
70.
How old were you? I don't care about the year.
19.
19, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you were up, like, so that makes, like, when you were going out to the clubs, you were like 16 or?
Younger.
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 Far out. And
because I was like, when I was 10, I was like 5'9".
Right. Yeah.
Right. So I got away with a lot of shit. You know? The first time I got asked for ID, the first time I got asked for ID was on my 18th birthday.
Right.
You know, and it was just like, and it was electric. I went, you're kidding. I've been coming here for years. You know, it was like, here you go.
Did they do that as like, you know, yeah, we know you, but it's your birthday.
No,
so.
They didn't know it was my birthday. All right. It was just.
Just random dudes.
Just random dude, you know.
Guys up at the town hall going,
just
I'm an angry bouncer dude.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
Far out.
But I always used to walk in with older guys, so that's, you know, they just assumed you're all the same age, you know.
Yeah.
See, I grew up on the North Shore. When I was 19, I was doing an apprenticeship and, like, you know, going home and making cheese sandwiches.
Yeah, I did that too.
Totally.
You know, not...
No, I did an apprenticeship too.
Yeah, what did you
do as an apprenticeship?
Yeah, well,
I'm a first class welder.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, my nephew's a first class. Oh, I don't
know. It doesn't exist in this country, which is like.
He's a boilermaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can do everything he can do.
Yeah.
You know, and more.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because I've got English and German qualifications.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You do the MIG and the Oxy.
Yeah.
Fuck. Well, that's pretty cool.
Big Tig.
It's one of the sort of things that I want to learn before the zombie apocalypse. Because I think welding's going to be fucking 100%. On the money.
It'll be useful.
Yeah, you know, start like, reinforcing your vehicles.
Yeah, you know. Like, yeah.
When we, bars when we, to windows.
Well, I've still got a welding machine. You know, it's like, I haven't done it for a while. But
me and Lucas have got like the zombie apocalypse drops. Yeah. We go to Bunnings.
Yeah.
And just take hold of Bunnings. Because like pretty much.
We lock that shit down.
You got
into
like
Bunnings.
Seeds. You got like welding stuff. You got like all the shit.
You got materials. They got a whole wooden area.
Yeah, they got everything. They got everything you need.
And
you
usually they're like a big fuck off kind of cement block of a building as
yeah.
well. So
yeah, always.
You can fortify that shit.
Yeah.
Now we're giving it away.
Welding.
I'm going to have
welding,
to beat this out.
So we have to take Pat Powell with us.
Yeah.
Have to need your address before you leave tonight, just in case it happens
the
next month.
Just in case the zombie apocalypse comes.
Good to know.
Yeah.
We're not going to lock that Bunnings down. All right, so where did we leave off? We just had a little break just for anyone in the know, but we were up to...
I think I got a band together with my cousin in Germany.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, Germany.
And that band was called Adisa.
And you were like 22 at this stage?
I would have been 22 by the time I... No. I would have been still 21 when I put the first band together with my cousin. And obviously we got inspired by things. Like we saw Bob Marley live there, Peter
Amazing.
Tosh.
How was that?
Bob Marley was incredible. He was really sick. And you could tell he was sick, but he still had the energy and he still had the charisma. And it was mind-blowing, you know.
Yeah, right.
And that would have been about 1980, I think, something like that.
Far out.
And then we saw Tosh... Maybe after that in Cologne. Unbeknownst to us, that gig was being filmed.
Yeah, right.
Right, so Perry Hensel, that did Reggae Sunsplash, the movie, he filmed that gig.
Yeah, right.
Right, so we're watching the movie a year later and we're going,
hang on.
Fuck, that looks like you. And the three of us that were at the gig were watching the movie. Like, we're all there.
That's awesome.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was unbelievable. And Perry Hensel was German.
Yeah.
So he showed in the movie, you see the German performance, but he interviews him in Jamaica.
Right.
So you don't know where the gig is. You just know it's a live gig, but it was in Germany.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Wow.
Did Marley spend some time in that neck of the woods, didn't he?
Well, he his doctor was Dr. Issels, and he was in Bavaria in Germany. Right. So his last kind of phase of treatment was there.
Right.
Before he went, you know. So I saw one of his last shows.
Right.
He might have done one or two after the one I saw.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And then that was it.
So I guess Dr. Issels was one of the Seventh-day Adventist doctors or...
What was it? No, Marley? He wasn't. Dr. Issels was one of those kind of like... just groundbreaking doctors having a bit of success with cancer treatment,
right.
You know.
Yeah, right.
And he was just doing better than a lot of other people at the time.
Yeah.
But no religious thing going on there. But Bob was Rastafarian.
Yeah.
Right? And Rastafarianism is essentially Old Testament Judaism.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right, from a black viewpoint. And Haile Selassie, his relevance is not him as the despotic emperor of Ethiopia, but his bloodline, he's a direct descendant of King David.
Right.
Which means King David wasn't some cute white dude.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know if you remember a while back, the Lost Tribe got found in Ethiopia and they ended up going to Israel and they didn't want to let him in. But they had been living the Jewish way authentically for thousands of years.
Right.
Far out.
Because Judaism as practiced in Israel has been somewhat doctored to suit the 20th century.
Right. Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So, and they've adapted. If you're like, no fucker was speaking Hebrew back then, you know, like, it had been a dead language for a long time, so they had to rediscover it, you know.
Right.
Meanwhile, you got these guys that are speaking like, was it Amharic or whatever it is, some kind of Arabic.
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Some version of it in Ethiopia. Nothing's changed. They're living off the land. They're doing, like they're living the same way they've lived for thousands of years and doing things in that way. So they were like truer Jews than the ones that are in Israel.
Right.
They just happen to be black.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that kind of makes sense when you think of the story of Jesus and all the rest of
Yeah, and that he's part
at
of
least,
the world.
He's at least an Arab.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, but yeah, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
He's not one white mofo like
no,
me.
No, he's just not. He's just not, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's the principle of Rastafarianism. Mm. So Bob injured his toe playing football, you know, and soccer football, real football.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, okay.
And don't give me that. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I have no affinity
play
for
with
sports,
your foot,
so
it's football, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
use
okay.
your hands, it ain't football.
Yep.
Right? So... You know, grabbing each other and shit.
I know.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, so,
these scrums and, like, you know, grabbing the testicles. And
what the hapoi, do you know about that?
Yeah.
There you go.
He was a sea eagle, I was from that area.
Into that? Okay.
No, not into it. But
I wasn't into the sport.
You know about it.
No. Not at all.
No, and if you are going to do that, at least be female.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he'd injured his toe, got a tumor in his toe.
Right.
And had they amputated the toe, he'd still be gigging.
Yeah, right.
But
it's crazy.
But he believed that to lose a part of himself was like a desecration, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So didn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because, like, I did quite a bit of, like, Bible time back in the day, and there's lots of stuff in the Bible that would actually counteract that.
Yeah.
You know, being a wise person with the bits that God's given you, you know, blah, 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 all that sort of bit, you know. If, you know, there's even, like, bits, you know, if you cut off the hand... And you try to work the body without the hand. Yeah, it's just all a bit... Yeah, I hate that about religion where it sort of like turns around. How do we get on a religion?
Quit it.
Stop it. It was Bob's toe.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Bob's toe was... Yeah.
But the thing is, religion of itself isn't necessarily a bad thing because it's just like a way of living, you know?
Yeah.
It's dogma. Mm. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's
dogma
right.
And fanaticism.
Yeah.
And that's where it goes wrong.
Mm.
Well, that's... Funnily enough, Dogma is a movie.
It's one of my favourites.
It's one of my favourites as well.
It's a brilliant movie.
Yeah. And that's why... It's like, so fun. Because, like, I was a born-again Christian and then, you know, I went and did lots of different things and... Mm. And then, you know, I got hit by a car.
I'm a born-again heathen, and you want to do all the things I've done.
Yeah.
And you've been born again a couple of times?
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
It's fine. But then, like, I got hit by a car, and then all the things that I'd learnt, none of the people were doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I was heavily into the, you know, bits and pieces and giving all my time, all my efforts. And just sort of drifted away from it.
Yeah.
And then I watched that movie Dogma, and it changed my whole mindset.
And you got it, yeah.
It was like, yeah, well, you know, beliefs. I don't believe in anything anymore.
Mm.
But good ideas.
Good ideas.
Yeah. Good ideas. I mean, you know, Jesus had some good ideas.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
You know? You know, and like being good generally to everybody.
Not a bad thing.
How can you knock that?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No.
But subjugating other people or trying to impress your will on someone, that's where it falls apart.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And it bringing it back to music, you know, it's like...
Please.
I don't love every style of music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But effectively, there's only two kinds. There's good and bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, death metal's not my favourite, right?
It's true.
But I'm pretty sure I can find a death metal track that I like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Definitely.
And it doesn't matter what genre it is, I'll be able to find... Because if you listen to the better end of it...
Yeah.
Good is good.
Yeah.
End of story.
I mean, you mix vinyl, right?
Yeah.
Like, because Pat DJ's up at the place where I used to work, and, like, he's still a vinyl
man.
Vinyl man. And you'll attest to this, like, where you go and buy a random vinyl record, you put it on, it might be all shit, but there'll be one track that is kind of okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it could be just some random, like, bit out of nowhere, but there'll be something in there that you like.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think it was, what's his name? Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
I remember him saying a cool thing about, you know, there's not, you know, don't have any music that, what's the term for when that, you know, like a kind of embarrassing song that you like? Like a, I don't know, like, but you know, he said, don't be embarrassed about any music that you like. If it's good and you enjoy it, then it's good music.
It's good music.
Like, I think at the time it was when that Gangnam Style song came out or whatever, and he's like, man, you know, it's a silly song, but I like it because it's fun and I'm going to listen to it.
I did too because it was fun. It was a welcome break to everything else because it was so different.
Yeah, it
was just stupid.
Yeah.
But it brings joy.
But it brought joy to everybody. I mean, like, I don't think anything has ever had the hits that had.
Yeah,
on YouTube.
On YouTube.
At the time, it was like, just massive.
Just crazy.
I don't think anything's beaten it since. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Crazy hits.
But if you go 10-pin bowling and it plays 10 times in an hour...
Well, that's another thing.
It's kind of a little bit...
That's how I feel about Love Is... That's how I feel about Love Is in the Air.
All right.
Because its biggest market was West Germany. It was massive. I didn't know who it was, but I hated it.
Yeah.
Right? I was sick of it, hated it, never want to hear it again.
Yeah.
And, of course, I moved to Australia from Germany and fuck me, he's from here.
You can't get away from it.
Yeah. And then that idiot Baz Luhrmann...
Yeah, right? Pops it in his song.
Pops it in his movie.
Literally can't get away from it.
So... Is it a bad song? Not really.
Yeah.
I just heard it too many times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's other shit around, you know?
Yeah.
Play
yeah.
something else.
Yeah.
Right? But you do corporate gigs, right? Mm. And someone says, oh, we're going to do that song. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, really? No, man. Like, I'm never singing that song. It's never going to happen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
You just stop that. No, not doing it. No.
I think you've got to have a cut off.
You just got to have a cut off somewhere. You know?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Like, you know, if you get in and perform something, you want to give it your heart.
Exactly, you know. Like, I would never have believed that I would ever sing Midnight Oil songs.
Yeah.
And I have, you know.
You have?
I have.
Which ones?
really? Yeah.
Did you do Peter Garrett?
No. I did me.
You did
I know, but like... you know where I'm going here.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I want to know where you're going. I worked on an album, right? Declan Kelly Presents Diesel and Dub, which is all Midnight Oil songs.
Right.
Reggae, rock, steadied out.
Right.
That sounds cool. Yeah,
it is cool. And that was a joy to do. Right. And a whole bunch of singers, Tina Harrod, Tony Hughes from King Tide, me, Native Son, Katie Noonan, you know, like Emma Donovan.
Awesome. Wow.
You know, it's just great. And we toured it for a couple of years and...
That's pretty fun.
I had a great time. That was fun, you know. So I did Read About It and Beds Are Burning.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hang on, can you give us a couple of lines of Read About It? Is that dropping on a dime there?
That'd be pretty hard.
Yeah, that's dropping on a dime.
I'll do Garrett, you do you.
You know what?
Read about
I'll just do the dance.
No, all right. Read about it, man, because it's a spoken word thing. So I do it like Linton Kwesi Johnson. A different spin on a different mix.
You were talking about this before the podcast, how when you talk to your mother.
Or another Jamaican.
You switch
almost
like dialects or like you got like a whole different way of talking. It's just the comfort thing.
Yeah.
It's like a different language almost, isn't it?
Well, not quite. It's more than a dialect, but less than a language. But, it's like I make a living out of it, you know.
Yeah.
But I do voiceovers here as well, right? And like, okay, Coco the monkey, right? For 12 years was a little Jamaican.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, you know.
Coco the Monkey. Yeah. Where's that from?
Coco Pops.
Coco Pops,
yeah. Coco Pops.
Yeah.
You're the voice for Coco Pops.
Yeah, for like 12 years.
Far out. I didn't
know that. What a
scoop. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there we go.
And then there's other stuff, you know, like Malibu.
The drink.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a horrible, sweet, sugary drink. Coconut and rum, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the catch line at the end is, let the sun enter your spirit.
I remember that.
There you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I used to do, there was one of my favourites was a thing, it was Alpine Tours, and, you know, you'd have a whole bunch of Aussies going, oh, we're going down the snow, you know, we're going Alpine Tours. Desmond, you come in? And I go, why would I want to do that? So I do a few things.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, yeah.
Coco Pops.
That's so funny. All right, let's get back on track. So West Germany, how long were you there for?
4 years.
4 years, okay. And you were pretty solidly just playing music there?
I was welding and playing music. Right. Because over there, you know, like I was welding full time and then on the weekends I'd do like, but you do like 3 gigs in a night.
Right.
In different cities because you only ever did a 1 hour spot. So you do an hour, get in a car, drive somewhere at like 170 Ks an hour to the next gig, do the gig.
Sweet.
You know, take it up to 210, you know, get to the next gig.
You're on the Autobahn or something.
On the Autobahn.
Yeah, right.
It was awesome.
That's great.
Got paid well, you know, it's just
how
like,
was the, like, did they have the booze buses in the Autobahns?
Didn't exist. No, the thing you were most likely to get booked for on the Autobahn was driving too slow.
Not a problem.
Because
you're a nuisance,
But because they all learn to drive well and properly over there.
Yeah.
So what happens is, let's say you're in the outside lane and you're doing like 170, right? And there's a Porsche coming down or a VW Rabbit, which was the fastest car in Europe at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? And they're doing like 210, 220, right? But you're in the outside lane. So what they do is about 2Ks away, they flash you. One flash, and you just get out of the way.
Yeah.
And they go, zoom. And then you can go back in there if you want.
Yeah.
You know, but it was, everybody did it.
Yeah.
And everybody
knew what was going on,
So it was never a hassle. It was just like...
Yeah.
And it had the lowest road tolls in the whole of Europe.
Oh, that's awesome.
Germany, because...
Going the fastest. They can all drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going... The roads are great.
Yeah.
They maintain them well.
Yeah.
The cars are great. They maintain them well.
Yep.
You know, so it's a different mindset.
Mm.
Most of the time, if you got breath tested, it was actually in the cities. It was rarely on a highway, like nothing ever went wrong, you know.
Yeah.
But in the cities, you would do. I'm like, I only got breath tested once there. But over there, they're pretty specific. They have to have good reason to use it, because if they use it and it's not positive, they have to pay for it.
Oh, really?
So they don't waste it.
Yeah, they got to be pretty confident.
So they got to be pretty confident that, you know. And when I got stopped, I'd walked out of a nightclub. I used to work in this club as a cellarman, you know, on the weekends. And I've come out, and trust me, I was smashed. Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I drank some over-the-top coffee just before I left, and I'd crossed over a line like too soon or something like that. Like I did something wrong that made them come over, and they kind of knew where I was coming from anyway. So they pulled me over and made me blow into the bag, and it didn't register. So
coffee.
They made me blow again. All right. And there was a rail bridge over this road. So we went under there because the lights were stronger there.
Right.
And he thought maybe his little torch wasn't, you know. And he was just like in utter disbelief because it hadn't registered.
He's like, fuck.
Right.
They've got to pay for this shit.
And he's got to pay for it and let me go.
Yeah.
Right. It was, and that was it, you know. It was like, bang, done. See you later. and I took off. I wasn't far from town, so I lived really close to the city, so I was got away with that scot-free, you know. And the only other time I got pulled, I didn't get pulled up because I actually sped off from the cops. So I'm speeding somewhere, right? And the cops kind of like, you know, and I just floored it, you know, took off. And I lost this cop. But back then, you know, like now the cops can see a number plate.
Yeah.
You know, well, they had that back then.
Right.
Right in Germany.
Yeah, right.
So it was like, and someone had told me, right? I'll tell you what I did anyway because it's fucking hilarious. So I just floored the car, taken off, lost the cop, and got to my place, parked the car, run inside, poured myself a really big rum, and sculled it, right?
Yeah.
So the cops come and knock on the door, you know, like minutes later, you know, if that, you know?
Yeah.
Look, you know, we've... saw you speeding, blah, 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 blah. I was like, yeah, and we need to test you. Have you had a drink? Yeah, just now. Like, I was so nervous, you know, because, you know, I had a really big drink.
Yeah.
Well, that negated everything because
they
didn't stop me on the road. They're not going to get a true reading. But I was told by someone to do that, which is why I floored it.
Yeah. You know? Get out of there.
Yeah, just get
out.
Get
a whole bottle in you and then
just whack as much down as possible, you know? And like you probably wouldn't get away with that now.
No.
But then it was nice early
loophole,
days.
Yeah.
It was a little loophole, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
But I love Germany. I had a great time there, you know, like music was like, look, it's just the whole of Europe. They've got an appreciation for artists of any ilk.
Yeah.
That was great. And being in a reggae band there was really cool because it was exotic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was a mixed race band, you know. We had a Welshman on keys and my cousin on bass and me and a couple of English guys and a couple of German guys and, you know, and we're just like skanking out. It was great.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
No, really, really good. Had a great time. And then I met this Australian woman who I thought was German.
Yeah, right.
Wrong. Anyway. And we ended up living together and that was good. And then I came across an expat Australian newspaper in Bremen up in the north because I used to work on contracts and travel a lot. And I brought this paper back for her, and on it, it had information because she was actually born in England but came to the country when she was 3 months.
Right.
So because you used to be able to travel freely on either passport, and she'd gotten married to some guy here, but they split up while they were overseas, but they both left on British passports.
Mm.
And all of a sudden it was like, if you don't get back within a year, you're going to lose your residency.
Right, yeah.
And they'll ship you to England, which you got no family, no nothing.
Yeah, right.
You know, so she went, I didn't want to go to Australia because everything I knew about it was negative.
Yeah.
You know, like I knew about all the Indigenous stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And it was, and the White Australia policy was still around, so it was kind of like, why would I want to go there?
Yeah.
It was like, you know, asshole country number three. It was like Rhodesia, South Africa, and Australia.
Right.
Wow.
In that order. And then Rhodesia disappeared, you know, because that turned into Zimbabwe.
Mm.
And then it was South Africa was number one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, Australia was... You didn't know about it until you got here because there really wasn't any information about it.
Right. We're a long way away from everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when I was coming out here, I watched a couple of movies to kind of get an idea of it, and I think I watched Storm Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome movie.
And Mad Max in German.
Cool. Not necessarily a good reflection on Australian culture, but, you know...
And I can't remember what else I watched, but those two definitely. And
my last job, at my last job, we did the restoration of Storm Boy because they were remaking it or whatever. So they did a re-release of the original one. We had to, one of the guys at work had to clean up the original negatives and stuff of the old Storm Boy. It was quite
That'd be fantastic. Cool. Yeah.
It was not great. The, the negative was pretty
degraded. Yeah, yeah,
pretty in pretty bad form. So. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you did a good job because we rewatched it recently and
looks good.
Yeah.
It wasn't me, but someone at my work had to sit there painstakingly painting out like all the scratches and little dodgy marks running through it. But anyway,
sounds painful. Yeah.
So I did that, you know, and I came out and I didn't really like it. It took me like a couple of years, you know. But I came here, I lived in Rockdale. Rockdale closed at 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
like there was just no one on the street.
Yeah.
I just come from like Hamburg, you know.
Yeah. I'm
like, what the fuck? And then I go to the cross. It's like everyone's raving about the cross, and it's like three streets.
Yeah, it's pretty small.
You know what I mean? It's like Hamburg is like a little mini city.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, our life in Sydney's still pretty shocking.
Yeah.
Well, it was good for a while.
It had its moment.
I think the 70s going through to the 80s. I was here for pretty much all of the 80s and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like I was gigging like six nights a week easy.
Yeah, wow.
You know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, and like Dan Barnett and I used to hook up a lot, right, back in the day. And we'd do our gigs. I was like, okay, I'll meet you around midnight or I'll meet you at Springfield's. And you didn't bother to, you knew whoever was playing was going to be great.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10 around midnight, it'd be like Jackie Wazarski, you know? So, like, it was just killer players, great music. You know, the basement back in the day was the same. It didn't matter who played, it was good. You never bothered to look at who was on.
You just went.
So we'd rock up and... You know, apparently Dan's got a few stories that I can't remember. That shit I've done. Anyway.
Yeah.
But we had a good time, you know, and it was rocking.
Mm.
And you know, most of the venues were owned by criminals, but they actually treated the musicians better than the corporate guys that own them do now.
Yeah.
Paid us better and took better care of us.
Yeah, right.
You had to turn a blind eye to some shit.
Yeah.
But we were treated better.
That's good. Have you been to the new iteration of the basement, whatever it is,
not
the
underground yet,
Something? I think Dan, when he was there, he said he was going to open.
Dan said it was good.
He did
the second Friday.
Yeah.
It was open.
Yeah.
I think he's done a couple down there now.
I'd be interested to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's still opening.
Yeah, it's open. It's running.
It's not called the basement
anymore.
It's Mary's Underground.
Mary's Underground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just licensing laws with names.
Yeah.
Still the same place.
Yep.
You know, probably not the same chick behind the bar, guy behind the bar.
No. They're all gone.
Yeah, it's all new.
Yeah.
Because one of the guys behind the bar was my son.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, cool. How old's he now?
36.
Fuck.
Yeah, I am old.
You wanted to say it again, didn't you?
Like, No, because my girlfriend's 37.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like a little trip down memory lane with the whole Pat Powell.
Yeah, man.
So, is it time to...
I think it might be that time. I think we need to move into an important part of the show. I think we need to delve.
We're going to delve?
Into the butthole.
I got a butt, and it's a butthole,
and it's stinky down there.
That was something, like, that was pretty good, right? Like,
yeah. Actually, do you want to tune on to this one?
No,
we'll do it again.
It's fine.
We'll get a professional musician on this.
Fine. Okay.
I got a butt, and it's a butthole.
And it's stinky down there.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Oh, see, that's in tune, see?
That was me doing that second time, by the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right.
Yeah, no. Definitely, Pat.
Credit. Yeah.
So, you guys ever watch, like, any John Waters movies?
Oh, not for a long time, I don't think.
All right, well, he was the one that brought in Scratch and Sniff.
Yeah. He's the one with, like, the little pencil moustache. Yeah.
So, you know, that's something you could do with the butthole, you know. It was like scratch and sniff.
Scratch and sniff. You know? We'll have to, like, release a little, like,
it's going
to
be, is that like the little strawberries you used to have? Like, in the 80s, you had the strawberries and you scratch them and it smelled like strawberries.
I don't want to be
scratching something that smells like a butthole. I can do without the scratch and sniff. I can just, like, put my hand down the middle. It's kind of like, you know.
But how did he, I remember hearing about this, but he got something in the cinema or something, right? Like,
I think it was a movie. I think it was Polyester or something like that. It was one of the movies.
Yeah.
And when you went into the cinema, you had like a card, right?
Yeah.
And at certain moments in the movie, you would scratch the card and the corresponding smell would hit you while you watch the thing on the movie.
Oh, wow.
And John Waters was one sick puppy.
He's an out there dude.
Yeah, totally.
I don't want one of those cards. Or maybe I do. I don't know. Yeah. Like,
hey, it's an experience.
Yeah,
it's an
experience, definitely. You know? Definitely. I just don't know what road he's going to take me down.
Exactly, trust me, every road you can think of, you'll go down.
He's a pretty serious
dude. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, this is the whole butthole moment just there.
Yeah, totally.
The whole scratch and sniff.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to have to release a card that you have to have while you're listening to the podcast.
Yeah. A scratch and sniff podcast. What sort of smells are we going to send out to these people?
I don't
know. You got a big budget?
Well, we got a zero budget.
Well, then if a zero budget, you're going to have to be using your own...
your own sense.
Biological smells.
Your own sense, you know?
Yeah.
But how do you get them to, like, correlate with the scratch?
Maybe have the little sound effect.
A little sound effect, just before the next thing is said, so you kind of, like... You scratch it, sniff it, and then that part of the pot, you know?
No, but that was the thing about scratch and sniff that I really didn't understand, because you sniff the card, it's a card, but then you scratch it, and it smells like butt.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Okay. So how do you get butthole in behind that scratch?
Just rub it.
How do you cover it over? You know what I mean?
I don't know the technology. I can rub shit on my butt.
Yeah.
But like, then any dime anybody puts that piece of paper near there,
it's just a piece of toilet paper.
It's like hermetically sealed. I don't know.
Do you have to spray paint or something over the top?
No, it might be something like that. Hence the scratching. So you scratch something off,
lamination or something,
and then it releases the aroma.
All right. Give me five aromas that we're going to give.
I guess it's like a scratchy.
You know, I don't want to put butthole in with aroma, because it's not...
it's only one smell.
Aroma is usually like food or perfume. You know what I mean? Like,
it's got a positive connotation.
Fair enough.
You know, like...
It's something that's palatable.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are people.
There are people
funny enough, you know, the Germans and the Japanese are into that kind of thing. That's true.
They're into kind of things. Yeah. They got vending machines with really the ladies' underwear and shit.
They work really hard and they play harder.
Yeah,
they do. Yeah. I've had a few Japanese friends in my time. Yeah.
No taboos over there.
No.
None.
No.
Good on him.
No. Fond memories.
Anyway.
So, on to the butthole moment, which is a lot less scent-related. We were just going to talk awkward moments.
Right.
Yeah. I'm having one of them now.
So, you were talking about your bathroom, your airport bathroom incident.
That was just funny. It was like, Saturday, I arrive in Adelaide to do a gig. So I've gotten off the plane and, you know, run to the bathroom. Every stall's taken and all the toilets are taken except for one door that's open. So I go zooming for that open door and there's like some huge dude peeing there with the door open. Like, oh God, I gotta wait. I really need to go.
Yeah.
And then he turns around and it's a mate of mine. The trombone player, just random. It was like, he's Pat. It was like, fuck, yeah, man. Like, you know, and normally we'd go grab hands. It's cool, you know, like, wash your hands first.
Yeah.
Right? You know, because I didn't really want to embrace immediately.
Yeah, just hold your role just for a second.
He turns around from the stall.
So I wait for him to go to the sink and turn around, and there's a drummer I know. And then there's a whole band in the toilets, right? And it's kind of like, you know, a selfie moment, but because we're in the toilet, it's like maybe not.
Yeah, we've all got fecal matter everywhere.
You know, and there's a few kind of, you know, unknown dicks around.
You know,
that you don't want in your shot. You know? So it was kind of, so that was kind of an amusingly funny moment that could have been awkward because I thought about it and thought, like leave the camera alone.
Yeah, you actually thought about doing a selfie in the bathroom.
Well, with a bunch of guys I know, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, that makes sense. Couldn't you just walk outside? It's like washing your hands. We could have,
but like the moment was there. Wow, there's a whole bunch of us in a dunny. That was what was funny.
Yeah.
Now, you may laugh, but there is actually a promotional photograph of me at a stall.
Yeah.
With a bunch of guys for a band shoot, right?
Oh, like a urinal?
Yeah.
Five guys.
I'm in the urinal, and they're all facing the other way, and I'm the one facing the urinal looking over my shoulder, right? And that's a promotional shot for a gig we did, right? That was taken at the Cricketers' Arms in Surrey Hills.
Oh, great pub.
So, you know, it's got the old ceramic...
Tiles all around the wall.
Tiles all around, yeah. I have taken a photo in a dunny with a bunch of mates, but I've grown past that now.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Yeah.
What do you think about the chat at the urinal?
You know what? It's got to be someone I know really well. Yeah. Right? And it's like, if it's a mate that happens to walk in, yeah, cool, no grief. But for some stranger,
it's kind of weird.
Because you have that urge to kind of look at someone when you're talking about it.
Exactly.
And then you're going to look at his dick.
Yeah.
And that's awkward.
Because that's where his hands are. He's kind of something in his hands.
I don't want to look at somebody else's dick,
No.
No, I totally agree. I don't, I'm not completely against it, but...
I'm not against it, it's just not where I want to look.
Yeah, exactly. But, sorry, my timeline's doing something weird. But, like, I had this one, like, I'm not completely against it, but it's always in the back of my mind when it kind of happens. I used to have this guy I worked with. He was this really kind of stoic German guy, and you could barely get a word out of him, except when you happen to be at the urinal together at work, and all of a sudden he was chatty Cathy.
Yeah.
Like, and I found it so weird. Like, in a work scenario, you could barely get two words out of him. And then as soon as we were standing next to each other at a urinal, he wanted to know all about my kids and, you know, what did you do on the weekend? That was his moment to have a chat.
That's when he relaxed.
Yeah, that's when he relaxed.
Yeah.
So it was
kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does kind of make sense.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got your dick in your hands. Yeah. Like, I'm relaxed now.
Yeah, right. You're happy, you know.
You got my important bits.
Yeah, it's still there. It's cool. Yeah.
But it was just so, like, I didn't necessarily mind it because, like, it was actually a moment to kind of hang out and chat. But at the same time, it was just in the back of my head going, I'm talking with my dick out.
Yeah, but you know what? In reality, it shouldn't be an issue.
No.
It shouldn't be.
No, but I tried not to make it an issue.
But you know, you can thank the Anglo-Saxons for that one.
Right?
Like, there's like everything's so kind of closeted and pent up, and you know,
things have to be prim and proper.
Yeah, that's it. You just got to release.
Although, to try and be a bit more loosey-goosey.
I'm going to say, I got the opposite of that sort of thing.
Mm.
At Wynyard, like, at the, like, train station in Sydney, where I'm, like, just in transit.
Mm.
And, like, I'm taking a pee at the urinal, and this guy, I swear he'd done this millions of times before. But, like, he broached me in conversation, so I had to look across. And he had, like, a fucking horse's dick. I'm sure it was his thing. He was like, and he just did it so he could see the look on my face.
When
I saw this, like, proboscis coming from out of his pants. I was like, oh, my God. Shit. God gave and he just kept on giving.
Yeah, so you reckon he was instigating the chat?
But you know what, like, I grew up with a few people like that, right? Mm. And the great thing about it was I wasn't one of them, right? But being universal, I was one size fits all. There were people that would run away from them.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, or once, never again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and I learned to kind of work with that. It's like, yeah.
By people, you mean girls, don't you?
Yeah. You're going to scare the shit out of her, you know? Like I've seen a girlfriend I was flirting with run out of a room one time. It was like screaming, you're not putting that in me. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Just like, you know? And I'm on the floor at this point, you know? Because he's just full of pride.
Yeah, he's like, ha, 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 ha,
you know? And it's like, you know, and she's just gone, nah.
Oh, hell no.
You know, you can't blame her, you know.
You get that sausage away from me.
Not everybody wants to be impaled, you know.
Yeah. Score one for the regular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So Vlad had to leave.
It's got to be hard, like, you know, when they get erect. I mean, I find sometimes when I get erect, it's like, yeah. Party time, it's good, but don't ask me to do anything complex.
Yeah.
Because like, all my blood is like...
Your focus is... The blood's here.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I've got an average...
The focus is here.
All systems have been redirected to the lower part of the body.
And I've got like about this much. I'm just going to do it in a non-verbal stance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? But we're
is
talking
this
about,
like when you go fishing?
Yeah. It was this big. But, like, you're talking about guys with, like, whoa! Imagine how much blood they do they almost pass out or...
Well, they're just stupid at that point,
you know? Just suddenly a Neanderthal.
Touch it.
Stomping around. Oh, dear.
No, but, you know, an awkward moment, a classic awkward moment for me was I did a wedding for... Japanese guy, right? And there was a club here called Neo Faro in Sydney years ago, and it was Yakuza money essentially.
Oh, okay.
Right? So they had like three duty managers that were all Japanese, and one of them got married. So I got booked to sing at the wedding on the biggest yacht I've ever seen in the harbor. Right?
Yeah, right.
No expense spared, like. Amazing thing. So I'm there with my partner who I'm singing with. So it was like an a cappella duo, you know. And
yeah.
I had a thing called Ten Wedge back then. It was trio, then duo. Anyway, Mike and I are sitting down and the couple turned around and said, we would like you to teach us to fuck.
Whoa.
And We kind of, excuse me, you know, we would like you to teach us to fuck. What do you mean? Well, we've been together for a long time and we love each other, but we were at university and studying and blah, 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 blah. We never learned how to pleasure each other. So they want to know how to... and
get down.
Yeah, you know, and we're trying to figure out how we can do this. Because we don't want to do anything with him.
Yeah.
But we want to do everything with her.
And you don't want to piss anyone off on this
And you don't want to piss anyone off. And,
Yakuza.
And you're trying to think, how can we do this and get away with it, you know? And it was just, there was no way of doing any of this without getting into some kind of shit.
Yeah.
No.
You know, so we had to walk away, you know?
They didn't have a room with one-way glass.
That was a seriously awkward moment because it was just like, you want us to... like,
what are we meant to do here?
Well, like I said, they have no taboos. So it was like... It would have been a perfunctory thing. It was like, here, do this and do that.
Do the thing.
Get in there.
You weren't tempted to go, okay, so...
I'll show you.
You just stand there and watch.
Trust me, we were tempted to do that because that's exactly what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
But it was like, we didn't think we could get away with it really, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, wow.
So they were okay with you just excusing yourselves?
We were incredibly polite.
Yeah.
I think that was the best option.
It was just like bow, scrape and back away.
Yeah.
It was almost like they were setting you up, like to, you know.
Well, no.
We don't really want to pay these guys.
I actually think that... It was kind of legit, totally genuine. You know, they're really, really nice cat. Yeah, right. But it was just they had no idea. Now,
that's amazing.
When you think of like, okay, this is pretty heavy. Something like incest, right?
Mm.
In the Western world, it's usually males with females, right? Mm. In Japan, it's usually mothers and their sons.
Yeah, right.
But it's based on the son needing to know how to pleasure a woman when he leaves home and takes a wife.
Wow.
So it's just seen differently and culturally it's differently. It's different, you know?
That almost seems good. Almost.
In a weird
I said
kind of,
almost.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
I did sneak that word in there.
The theory might check out.
Mum's going to teach you how to...
I can't remember which
take
island...
Take the man from inside the boat.
There's a Pacific island where there's a guy whose job it is to deflower virgins before they get married.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And it sounds like a great job, and then you realize it's every virgin. So the good ones, the bad ones, the pretty ones, the ugly ones, the big ones, the little ones. He has no choice
in between. Yeah, right.
He has no say in this. So now it's...
It's literally a job.
It's not as joyful now because you don't get to pick.
Yeah.
It's like she's getting married next week. You need to sort her out. You know? But I remember the first time I heard of that job, it was like, wow. Yeah. You know?
Sign me up.
What island is this?
Yeah. And then you get a bit more information. It's like, oh, no, that sounded so good. I got it. You know, like, hold on, she's 90? She's just getting married? No, man. Like, I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
It's like...
That's the epitome of awkward.
It's
that whole Muslim thing where they go to 90 like virgins or whatever it is.
70 virgins.
Yeah. It's like, well, okay, well, I'm stuck with a lot of women that don't know how to do shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's just wrong. They got that bit wrong. Yeah. I want to be 70 dirty bitches to teach me some shit. I don't want to go and teach anybody anything. I want to learn something new.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, you know, if I must do shit to get to the paradise early, then I want nothing but joy when I get there. I don't want to go out there and be a teacher.
Yeah, exactly.
Done enough learning here on Earth. Yeah. You know, come on, I just blew up at, you know, the trade centers or whatever.
Oh, dear.
So, you know.
Blowing up town centres or anything is not good in any response. Just to, like, make that clear.
Yes, good.
Yeah.
there's been many awkward moments. Many awkward moments. Some more awkward than others, you know. You kind of have you deal with them the best way you can.
Yeah, that's right.
Usually, it's diplomacy is the way for me. You know, I'll find some way to kind of verbally grovel out.
Yeah,
you know.
And I think the older you get, the easier it is to handle awkward moments. I think you've kind of been there and done.
Well, you've been there. You've made your mistakes.
Yeah, numerous.
Yeah,
repeatedly.
Yeah.
And sooner or later you go, all right, okay, I got this now.
Yeah. It's just normal.
Yeah.
All right, well, we've actually been going on for quite a while. I think it might be time to close up the butthole and also the man-child cave for another week.
Oh, it's been awesome.
This has been very cool.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming in, Pat.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, nothing like a little butthole surf every now and again.
Is there anything that the listeners should listen out for with you?
Anything with my name on it.
Yeah.
If it says Pat Powell. Right, because I sing in various bands.
Yeah.
So hopefully there's something you like, because I do blues, jazz, funk, reggae, ska.
Nice.
So look out for the band
you like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And support live music.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one.
Definitely.
And hopefully there's been talk of lifting some of the old Sydney lockout laws.
They should lift all of them, but some's better than none.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, apparently they'll all be gone by next year, apparently.
Well, yeah, supposedly they're still keeping King's Cross or something.
I think. I don't know why, because King's Cross is now residential. It's
nothing there anyway.
Whatever it was that it had is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's like they've sold off all the clubs.
Yeah.
Turned them into apartments. So they did what they wanted to do. Yeah, so there's no reason
successful.
That
yeah.
they were successful. So they don't need the lockout laws anymore.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
they've successfully destroyed everything.
Yeah.
Boo.
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 All right, kids. You know where to listen out for us. You know, listen to us on any of the podcast apps. If you want to talk to us about anything, grab us on Facebook, on the Instagram, on the Gmail, manchildcave@gmail.com. You know where we are. We're even on TikTok, although we haven't done much of that.
No.
We got like one video on there, so you can check that shit out.
Yeah, it's fun.
All right, kids. We'll talk to you next time from the Man Child Cave.
Ciao.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello again, everyone. Lucas and Crispy here.
Welcome to the Man Child Cave at the end.
That's us.
This is the after version.
Yeah, the little post-show after party. We're just dropping in to say Merry Christmas.
This is our first, like, hidden track.
Hidden track.
Can you find it? We left a note at the beginning.
It's real obvious. It's not that hidden.
Yeah. It's actually quite open. We told you all about it. Yeah. It's nearing the 21st of December.
Yeah.
Which is a date
that yes.
everybody gets really, really upset about. Or very happy. But mainly the first, then the second, and hopefully the first, not too much.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that's okay.
But hey, all you listeners out there, we just wanted to say a little Merry Christmas and let you know what our plans are for the new year.
Yeah, we've got some big ones. We've been gestating them for at least 6 months now.
I know for sure I've got some big ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's mainly because what he eats.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
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 It's all to do with diet.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, kids, we're going to go on a little bit of a hiatus in the new year, but we're going to come back bigger and better than ever.
Better.
That's
more refined.
Yeah.
We are the new $1 million podcast.
But we're going to come back bigger and better. We're going to be more polished. We're going to, you know, going to have more ideas and plans. We've got a couple of our mates that are going to come on board and help out. Some names that you've heard before. And, hopefully we'll be able to kick it into high gear, have a Man Child Cave 2.0, Season 2.
Season 2 is coming to you people soon.
That's it. And it's going to be exciting. We're going to be just, you know, smashing it.
Yeah.
And we're excited. We can't say too much yet, but it's going to be cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, bear with us. We'll have a little month or two off while we're preparing, planning.
Yep, yep.
We're going to strike while the iron's hot.
And the iron is going to be, like, hot.
So hot.
My soldering iron ain't got nothing on the Man Child Cave.
No, it's going to be burning. It's going to be scalding hot.
Boosh. Be like the sun coming down and making your ears happy.
That's it.
In such a good way.
All right. Is there anything else we need to tell the viewers out there?
Oh, just Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas.
Season's greetings.
Keep it clean. Keep it safe.
Yep.
You know, don't be crazy on the roads.
That's it.
Enjoy Double yourselves. Demerit points are there.
And they're there to keep you safe.
If you're in another country, then double demerit points means our government hates us more than your government.
And they need to make some money.
Yeah. Revenue.
Nice. All right, kids. We'll talk to you soon. Watch this space.
See us in sometime in February.
Yeah, 2020, players.
2020. No Mencha Cave.
2.0. All right. All right, kids. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao.